Accession number 8736, roll number 1.
Lord Harding, tape 1. Could I ask you something about your background, Lord Harding? What part of the country were you born in?
I was born and bred in a village called South Pelton, which is in South Somerset. It really is a small market town, and without a railway, and without, in those days, of course, without any bus service. So I grew up as a small boy leading a really completely country life. I had three sisters, one older and two younger, and I had a host of cousins, second, third cousins in the area, usually sons and daughters of farmers or small tradesmen. And my grandfather on my paternal side was a farmer, but I never knew him. He died before I, and my grandmother on my paternal side. But my grandfather on my maternal side owned and ran the village, or they call it a town, draper's shop and news agency. And at one time, my mother ran the newspaper shop. I knew them quite well, but they were pretty old when I. They were both my parents came of very large families. I think my father was one of 8 or 9. My mother was one of 12 or 13. In those days, they had very large families. So I had masses of aunts and uncles and cousins, now all over the world, of course. We didn't have any sort of wild amusements. We were brought up very strictly. My parents were very staunch nonconformists and teetotalers. And we were never allowed to go even to the local circus when it came to the time. And there was not a drop of drink in the house, and on Sundays our reading was confined to the Bible and Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress. We went to chapel morning and later on evening, Sunday school in the afternoon, and for a walk with our parents on Sunday afternoons, and that was that. Our amusements were rarely, in the summer we went out haymaking with our farmer's friends and sons and daughters, birds nesting, collecting stamps, those sort of things, and bird eggs and things like that, and playing games. We played cricket and football. And those things, and there were always concerts and things like that, which we had to take part in. We had to sing in the chapel choir, for example. Well, that was the upbringing, really. And then my parents were very badly off, really. My father was a clerk in the local solicitor's office, and he and my mother together did the rate books for the place in order to earn a little more money. So there wasn't much money. We were well fed and well clothed and kept warm and comfortable, that sort of thing. And we were, I think, a very happy family. And then when it came to schooling, I started off in a small dame school with a whole about a collection, I suppose, of a dozen or more cousins of mine. And the school was run by an elderly lady who was very good. And it was at about, I suppose, at a place called Watergore, which was a little way away from South Petherton, about a mile, and we used to walk there in the morning and walk back, and we all played together, and we all tried, we learned reading, writing, and arithmetic, and he was very good. And then it came to going on from there, and my parents wanted to send me to Ilminster Grammar School, which Ilminster was about 5 miles away from South Petherton. And I was able to get a scholarship for that, which was a help. And to start with, I went there as a day boy. I used to cycle into Ilminster morning and back in the evening. That went on for, I don't know, two or three years, a couple of years or so. Then I got a congestion of the kidneys and was laid up for about 6 or 8 months, I suppose. And after that, my parents arranged for me to be a weekly boarder at the school. The boarders lived with the headmaster and his sister. He was unmarried. In the headmaster's house, and there were about, I suppose, not more than a dozen of us boarders then. And again, we were well fed. I was, interested, I think, in my lessons, as interested in a small boy that age is. I think the teaching was good. It was the headmaster was particularly good, and. But he used to fall asleep sometimes in the early afternoon, and that was the time when we enjoyed ourselves in the classes he took when I got into the sixth form. And I think he took an interest in me personally. In fact, I one of my most vivid recollections of those times is having to go up. He always dressed for dinner every night. Having to go up to his dressing room and what do you call it, translate Ovid to him. And on one occasion, he reduced me to tears. That I have a very vivid recollection of. But it's always good for me. And Ilminster is a very attractive place, and the school was good. I don't know how many boys there were. I suppose about not more than 100 anyway, probably rather less. And the masters were good. And that was my education. And then my parents having very little money and that sort of thing, they wanted me, I think, to go into the ministry. They would have liked that, I think. They never pressed it on me, but they would like that. They were very staunch and devoted chapel girls. And I mean, for one example, we on a Sunday evening, about this time, well, after we had our supper on Sunday, we used to stand round that piano with my mother while she played hymns and we sang them. Then we were sent off to bed. But in those days, we went to bed with a candle, and bathroom in the house. We had a Saturday night bath in a hip bath. And the water, hot water, had to be taken up to the hip where the hip bath was. And that was a sort of way of life. I don't know if I've described it to give you a picture of it. Well, then I went to, and at Ilminster Grammar School, I passed, what did they call it in those days? What matriculation it is, but they didn't call it that. They call it something else. I can't remember what it was called now. But that's the equivalent of that. And so then I wanted to be a farmer. My father said, that's no good. I've got no capital. You can't start farming without capital. Several of my cousins were good many. Most of my cousins were farmers. And so that was it. That was what I wanted to do. My headmaster wanted me to be articled to a solicitor and go into the law. And my parents felt that I had to start earning some loving money. So in the end, I went into the civil service. And I passed the examination as a boy clerk at the age of, I suppose, yes, between 15 and 16, and I left school. And at that time, a boy clerk earned 15 shillings a week, and that was my pay. And fortunately for me, I had an aunt who lived in London, whose husband worked in London, and they lived out in one of the suburbs. And they had a son of about my own age, a little younger than me, about a year or two. Yes, I think a year or two younger than me. So that, and he was still at school. He was at St. Paul's then. So I went and lived with them, and I started working in a small branch of the Post Office Savings Bank in a building which was then in, which was in Smithfield Square. And it's still, I think it's still there. I remember going through there not very long ago, and I think that building is there. It's on the west side of Smithfield Square by the meat market. And I worked there for a tap, who was, I suppose, a second grade clerk, second division clerk. And one of my, well, he put me on to work a typewriter. And I worked a typewriter with two fingers, you see. One of his favorite things was the hand, sayings was the hand something to me. Say, no, Alan, as he called me, I want a Chinese copy of that. And that meant he wanted an exact copy of whatever it was, a document or a set of figures or whatever it was that he gave me. And I had very little money, and I used to go, there was in Cheapside, there was a vegetarian restaurant where you could get a lentil steak, they called it, and a banana fritter or something like that, which cost about 2 or 3 shillings. And that used to be my lunch. And when I got back to my aunt's house, of course, I got a very good evening meal, and my... My cousin came home from school. He was the day boy, with his homework to do, and we became very good friends. And he was very keen. I think at that time he had started to be very keen on military history. And it didn't rub off very much on me in those days, I don't think. I thought, well, you know, Jeff, his name was Jeffrey, Jeff, that's what he's interested in. But one thing I do remember, and I was reminding of it, his sister of it the other day, who's now a widow and living in Spain, I reminded him that we had a small cannon which we used to load by muzzle loading and then fire it with a small projectile of some kind or other out of the kitchen window into the garden. We had a room upstairs where we used to play and do our work, homework, and whatever it was, and read and so on. We used to fire it down. So that is my only sort of military. Then it's the military part of my background. I mean, my parents and my family, of course. I mean, they weren't pacifists, but they were very, very anti-military. And my uncles and cousins and so on. Looked upon the army as far as I recollect, as something which was nothing to do with them at all, and they were typical West Country, independent West Country yeoman farmers, small tradesmen, and that sort of thing, with strong, very strong views about. Religion, about welfare, about peace, and about completely antagonistic to anything to do with war or militarism of any kind. So that is really is my background.
Were you able to continue your education in London? You know, did you go, for instance, go to night classes?
Yes, when I went to London. You see, the whole point was that if I wanted to make a career, to earn a livelihood, to earn my own living, I had to get promotion. There were 3 grades at that stage within my grasp. There was a boys' clerk, there was an intermediate division clerk and a second division clerk. And there was an examination for each of them. And my first next step was to cast the exam to be I think it was called an intermediate clerk, but it was better paid, rather about, I don't know, double, I suppose, what I was earning then. And it was a stepping stone to a second division clerk, which was my sort of ultimate target in those days. And so I had to go to night classes. And I don't know, I can't remember how, but probably about three nights a week, I should think, after I finished work. I used to go along, I think it was called King's College Night School in London. It was somewhere up in the Holborn area. And I suppose about, the classes were about 2 hours, maybe longer, 3 hours, but that sort of thing. And about three nights a week, and that went on, or I suppose for a year or so, until I took the next exam. Must have been a couple of years, I suppose, until I took the next exam. Well, then, when I took the next exam, I became what I now call an intermediate clerk, and I was posted to another branch of the post, a more up-to-date branch of the Post Office Savings Bank, which was in West Kensington, quite near Olympia. Well, in fact, at the back of Olympia in those days. And I used to go by underground there from the suburb where my aunt and uncle lived and worked there all day. And then I was put on, my job there was to work an adding machine. A lot of people won't believe that there were adding machines in 1910 and 1911, that sort of time, but there were. And my job was to take the various accounts and add them up, the savings bank accounts.
Was it a mechanical adding machine?
It was a mechanical. Thing. It stood, it was on legs, it stood about that high, and the keyboard was up here. It was like a typewriter keyboard. And it had, I can't remember how you put the record in, but you had a thing which in front of you with all the figures on, and you had, so there was a compilation of them, and they were in different, under different headings and in different columns. And it was all to do with the accounts of the Post Office Savings Bank. Well, now, in that office, there was a chap called Jimmy Maxwell, who was a very keen territorial. He was a bit of a swashbuckler, and he loved walking about, going about in uniform with his boots and things like that. And he had been a yeoman. He'd been in one of the, in the sharpshooters, one of the County of London yeomanry regiments. And I think he was he'd come to be a sergeant major or a warrant officer, a territorial warrant officer in that unit. And he was very keen, he was a very good chap, and he asked me, he and several of his brother officers used to go down to, whatever the name, near Egham on the river. They had a camp, camped in the back of a pub down there. And he asked me to go down with him. And there were about four or five of them, I suppose. And they used to shoot on the ranges down there. That was the sort of raison d'etre for going there, and also rowing and punting on the river. And they used to go down on a Friday night and spend Saturday and Sunday there. And I used to go down with them. And it was, I wasn't a good shot. I did do some rifle shooting on the ranges there. I don't know what the ranges were called. Anyway, somewhere near Egham it was. And that was great fun. We cooked and looked after ourselves, so I learned quite a bit of looking after myself then. And it was all very rough and ready and very happy. And after time, he persuaded me. After time, I'm not sure whether he had then left the yeomanry and gone to an infantry regiment, but sometime about that time, he was offered a commission as a second lieutenant in an infantry battalion, which was the 11th County of London Regiment, the Finsbury Rifles. And they had a headquarters at the top of Penton Street, just north, next door to Pentonville Prison. He'd been given a commission in that, and he was very keen about it all. I think he missed his yeomanry and orders and things like that, and the rather swashbuckling way of life of a yeoman. But he was very keen, and he persuaded me to join, to put my name down as an applicant for a commission in this battalion, this regiment. And so I did, and this was about, I suppose, this must have been 1912 or 1913. I think probably, yes, 1912 probably it started, and then carried on into 1913. And the regiment was commanded by a regular officer of some Scottish regiment, I think he came from, called Grant. And the adjutant was a chap called Johnny Crosby, who was a rifleman, came from the Rifle Brigade. And to start with, when he persuaded me to do this, I went along to the drill hall at the top of Penton Street and was interviewed by the adjutant. I was asked some very rudimentary questions, not the sort of questions you get asked now at a regular officer's selection board. But they were all sort of about one way of life and your interests and what you did in your spare time. And then he said, well, you'd better come along and see the commanding officer next week. So one evening the following week, I went to see the commanding officer, and I was interviewed by him, who asked me very similar questions. And then after a bit of time, I was informed that I was being given, granted a commission as a second lieutenant in the 11th County of London Regiment. And that was in May 1914. By that time it was May 1914. I should add, I think that my parents were very anxious for me, when I went to London, to have some, what you might call, Christian associations. So I was persuaded and maybe ordered to join the YMCA, which I did in the central YMCA. Was then on the corner in Tottenham Court Road, I think, or somewhere around about there. And I had played quite a lot of hockey at school, and so I was opted into the central YMCA hockey team. And I used to go in the winter and play hockey, and I made quite a lot of friends there. I used to go every Saturdays in the winter down to somewhere outside London. I can't remember where it was. They had playing fields there, and play hockey, and we played matches every Saturday against it. And so that was an occupation for me. And then on Sundays, of course, my aunt and uncle were churchgoers, and so I was with them on a Sunday, and my cousin and I always went for long walks all round. It was outside London, it was Wilsdon, Harlesden, I think it was called, the suburb they were in. We used to go for long walks out towards Wembley in that part. So that was the way my weekends were filled in.
What sort of training were you doing once you had joined and got your commission in the territorial?
Well, then we started off in the drill hall in Penton Street. We started off with drill, arms drill, and that sort of thing. I can't remember really being given any what I call tactical training then. We I don't remember either. Of course, it was only, you see, it was only from May 1914 until August when we were mobilized that I was, what you might call, a part-time territorial soldier. And I think my recollection of it, it was mostly close order drill and weapon training with a rifle, with a Lee Enfield rifle. And I don't remember anything else. They did have two old Maxim machine guns, which I was put in charge of later on, but that came later. But I don't remember having any of the things that happened to a young officer now, like tactical training, you know, and military history, all that sort of thing. I think it was pretty, square bashing, really.
Did you have any idea, Lord Hardinge, before war broke out in August 1914, that there was a war coming? Were there any signs?
Well, I think so, yes. I think so. Looking back on it all, yes, I felt, you know, I think maybe that had some bearing on my agreeing to join the Territorial Army. But, towards the end of 1913, it was pretty obvious, I think, that war was coming, that there was going to be a war. But I wasn't all that interested in international affairs. I mean, I read the newspaper, but I don't think I was, I don't think I was at all well versed. I was much too busy, really. By that time, I'd become a second division clerk. And I was kept very busy in my office, and I moved to another office, and I can't for the life of me remember where it was, somewhere in London.
But what were those signs? You know, what made you think there was a war coming? Can you remember?
Oh, I don't. No, I couldn't. I'd be romancing if I pretended that I did. No, I mean, I suppose it was the general atmosphere and what one read in the newspaper about the Agadir crisis, for example, and that sort of thing. But I don't remember anything much else. I don't think. No, I'm pretty sure there wasn't any sort of effort to build up the increase the strength of the Territorial Army, or to provide them with better and more up-to-date equipment. I don't remember anything like that happening. No, I think it was the general reading of the newspapers, things like the Agadir crisis and so on.